of a really formative effect on the development of Chan in China, which became Zen. So the stanzas I'm going to be talking about today, I will read. The way and its power. The Tao is like a well. Drink from it and it never dries up. Deep, yes, the ancestor of the 10,000 things. Hidden, but always present, older than God. By emptying our minds and filling our cores, weakening our expectations and strengthening our resolve, we lose everything we know, everything we desire. Doing, non-doing, all things fall into place. The Tao is like a bellows, empty, yet infinitely capable. The more it moves, the more it creates. The more we talk of it, the less we understand. Just return to the center. The valley spirit never dies. We call it the dark womb. As soft as gossamer silk, yet we can't wear it out. And I think that's as far as I'm going to go today. We'll see. I could go farther, but once I get into this, I tend to be kind of talkative. Although this is, yeah, I tend to be kind of talkative. So the way and its power, Tao De Jing, Tao De. The power is De, but De also means virtue. So there's a power within us, a deep power, which is called the Tao, and by the Tao is the way. And that's where we get real power from. Not the power of a chattering mind, but deep power from dipping into the Tao, and we manifest it as day, as power to do stuff. But that power is also virtue. Day has two meanings, power and virtue. So there's just virtue. It comes out because we feel inner being. We feel connected with everyone. We feel connected with everything. So the Tao Te Ching, the way and its power. And it's so influential in the development of Chan that the third ancestor in our lineage, Song San, whom I've given many talks about, has a long prose poem called Faith in Heart Mind. And he borrows heavily from the Tao Te Ching with no footnotes. These teachers use no footnotes. You can say they're plagiarizing, but I don't think so. They get this in them. They get this in them and it comes out. But it would sure be easier to read some of them if they footnoted, especially Dogen. Anyway, Song San, Shi Tao, the eighth ancestor, very influenced by Taoism and all of the Chan teachers, actually. So the first phrases, the first stanza, the Tao is like a well, drink from it and it never dries up. Deep, yes, the ancestor of the 10,000 things, hidden but always present, older than gods, sometimes plural, sometimes singular, depending on the translation, God and gods. The Tao is like a well, drink from it and it never dries up. So our practice is to patiently and persistently dig below the surface of the churning mind, so that we can discover that water and drink from the well. It's right here in inner being of everything and everyone. As Dogen says, take a breath and exhale fully. Rock your body right and left. and settle into steady, immovable thinking. Excuse me, sitting, thinking. That's interesting that I said that. But Dogen doesn't kick out thinking. Thinking is good. I'll get to that a little later. Thinking is part of this. We don't kick it out. It's steady, immovable thinking. It is simply the Dharma gate of joyful ease, the practice realization of totally culminated enlightenment. So one shovel and there, water gushes up. One sincere effort, the water gushes up. You may not be aware that it's gushing up, but if you make your effort from your heart mind, it gushes up. And that's totally culminated enlightenment, because you don't need some special thing later. You're lighter. This water is an elixir. It lightens you. It lightens you. It's non-contingent. It doesn't contingent on anything. Oh, climate change is awful. Democracy is falling apart. Is democracy falling apart? How can it be? Ah, we need to work. We need to do what we can to help people come back to inner being so that they value all the different species and the democracy of the species all living together interdependently. Wow. But we forget, we get locked up. So we have two kinds of meditation we do, which I've been talking about for years, and because I've been talking about them because they're what Buddhists do. Focused meditation, focused awareness, focusing on your breath, focusing on repeating something to yourself, a gata or a mantra, listening to guided meditation for your focus, listening to apps. Lots of people listen to apps now. Finding a good app is healthy. One said, that's not real Zen. What's real Zen? You tell me. It's inner being. That's real Zen, inner being. It doesn't kick anything out. So we have focused awareness. And then we also have my teachers. If you want to tame your sheep or your cow, give it a large pasture. A Qigong tassel. If you want a sheep to tame your sheep or a cow, give it a broad pasture. That's just sitting. Just not doing anything. Not trying to focus. This is complementary practices of what we do. They're what we do. What we do. They're all the same and they're all different. So we can uncover the sediment that conceals this wonderful well, or that prevents us from entering Dogen's gate of joyful ease. Another analogy, gate of joyful ease. Drink that fresh water. The next phrase, deep, yes, the ancestor of the 10,000 things. The 10,000 things, that's a very old Buddhist expression. It refers to the infinite diversity of the universe. 8.7 million species I read the other day. Oh, how many are dying every day because of climate change? How many get extinct every day? 8.7, 10,000 species. Just within the 10,000 things, but of course the 10,000 things includes the earth and the solar system and infinite solar systems. So it's really a 10 gazillion things, isn't it? Deep, yes, the ancestor of the 10,000 things, the Tao, stillful joyness, it's right in here. Wow, hidden. Deep, yes, the ancestor of the 10,000 things, hidden, but always present. Hidden, but always present. Our yin energy, in Taoist terms, yin-yang, Taoist terms. Our yin energy, more feminine energy. Linda, my partner of many years, cooking something like, she cooks 3 days a week for my disabled daughter-in-law. Cooks for 3 hours a day, 3 days a week. I asked her how long. She said, 3 hours on the average. And she gets nothing for it. And she has to cook that much because my daughter is so, she has to cook very special foods because my daughter is disabled. She gets nothing for it, but she gets everything for it. If you get nothing for something and really do it, you get everything. Yin energy. Yin energy. Tapping into this hiddenness that's always present, right under the surface. So Fritz Perls, the Zen psychologist from the early 60s, said, lose your mind and come to your senses. And I say, leave the chatterbox cafe and enjoy this polysensory experience of all these beings, the birds outside, the computer light, the backlighting, the seeing you but not seeing you. I only see a few of you. Some of you are hidden, but in that darkness is where your light is. Wow. Wow. But always present. But we don't have to leave the chatterbox cafe. We don't have to lose our mind. Actually, the mind is very important. In Buddhism, we say there are six senses. There's sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, and mind. And mind is an equally important sense. In Buddhism, equally important. The problem is that mind wants to own the whole deal, wants to take it over, wants to mold it, wants to get the other senses to shape up, get in line. Not, they're misbehaving. That's the problem. So we don't need to leave the chatterbox cafe, but let's just stay there without chatting too much, just drinking our coffee with each other, just breathing with each other, just having a little bagel with each other. It's okay to have a bagel with cream cheese or double cream cheese or whipper triple cream cheese. We don't have to be so austere, but this is an austere practice. But it's not the austerity of giving things up. It's the austerity of just being with what is and not needing to indulge it by chatter, 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 chatter all the time, internally or externally. Hidden but always present, older than gods, older than God, the womb from which all life springs and to which it returns, your own womb. Whether you're a male or female, it doesn't matter, the same thing. When we give up, or whether you're trans, it's the same thing, or bi, it's the same thing. Your own womb, right here, your trunk. But your trunk is the trunk of the tree of life, so it's not just your trunk, it's the trunk of the tree of life. Older than God, older than gods. And this means giving up our fixation on the three spheres. As trained as a psychologist working with many, many people with serious and mental illness, serious and persistent mental illness. We would work with them and we would come back to their room and support each other as social workers and psychologists and say, well, was Mary oriented in all three spheres today? Oriented in three spheres. As human beings, we want to be oriented in time. We want to be oriented in space. And we want to be oriented in name. And if we get disoriented, we can get really confused. But if you go deep in meditation, you allow yourself to get disoriented. you allow to move it deeper than those spheres to the Tao, which is very different than mindfulness. It seems similar, but not. If you're doing your meditation and you have the support of a teacher and you have the support of a community, at some point you will do this and you will experience a wonderful nurturance of it. And then you can come back to the world, because we all need the three spheres. We all need the three spheres. That's how we communicate. That's how we are. But the womb is our origin, where we get our nurturance. So the next stanza. By emptying our minds and filling our cores, weakening our expectations and strengthening our resolve, we lose everything we know, everything we desire. Doing, non-doing, all things fall into place. Doing, non-doing, all things fall into place. So Chuang Tzu, who lived 200 to 300 years after Lao Tzu, has a famous parable that I quoted many times, but not in about 5 years. Well, as I said, I'm going to do Lao Tzu, and then in a few months, I'll get to Chuang Tzu. Anyway, his parable is, if a man is crossing a river and an empty boat collides with his own skiff, even though he be a bad-tempered man, he will not become very angry. It doesn't say he won't become angry. That's important. Don't think I get pissed sometimes? He will not become very angry. But if he sees a man in the boat, he will shout at him to steer clear. If the shout is not heard, he will shout again and yet again and begin cursing. And all because there is somebody in the boat. Yet if the boat were empty, he would not be shouting and not angry. If you can empty your own boat, crossing the river of the world, no one will oppose you. No one will seek to harm you. So that's Chuang Tzu. So emptying our boats, that's what this practice is about. That's what it's about, emptying our minds. And just enough so we can return to the center. That's what it says, emptying our minds, enough so we can return to the center. We can return to the center. So the center. The center in Chinese is Zonggo. I mispronounce it. The middle kingdom. The torso, which is the middle kingdom. Below the Chatterbox Cafe. The Hara, the Tangjian, the heart mind. The middle center. With steady practice, we're able to do this. Return to the center. Empty our boats. We don't have to empty them completely. don't get too weak. Have an expectation you're going to empty them completely. Don't have that expectation. But you just have to empty them enough to manage the keel in the boat so that you can be calm in turmoil. So that you can be confident when storms come up. More storms now. More storms coming up climate-wise. My own California, I grieve for my California. But you know, it's where I grew up, where I lived till I was a young adult. I grieve for it because climate change is so hard on it, so hard. But I stay in the middle kingdom when I grieve. I stay in the middle kingdom. Generally, I stay without trying. Generally. So Eugene Herigal, one of the first Zen teachers I read as a very young man before most of you were born, Zen and the Art of Archery. Raise your hand if you have read Zen and the Art of Archery. Oh, not very many. Older people like me. People are not quite as old as me, because I'm probably the oldest person here. Anyway, Jun Herigal, working with the Japanese Zen master who was also an archer and was teaching him archery. And the teacher said to him after a while, don't think of what you have to do. Don't consider how to carry it out. The shot will only go smoothly when it takes the archer himself by surprise. What does a poor little mind that's trying to figure everything out and trying to get enlightened do about that? Just trying to get a straight shot? The right art, cried the master, is purposeless, aimless. The more obstinately you try to learn how to shoot the arrow for the sake of hitting the goal, the less you will succeed in the one, and the further the other will recede. What stands in your way is that you have a much too willful will. You think that what you do not do yourself does not happen. Weaken your resolve, strengthen your resolve, weaken your expectation. Our expectations we get caught on, but our aspiration helps us. But as soon, I've said this many times, as our aspiration hardens into expectation, we get lost, and we have to come back to getting support from teacher, teaching, or community. He continues, and I'm just going to do one more sentence from him. The right shot at the right moment does not come because you do not let go of yourself. And so long as you call your concern about failing forth, your hand will not open in the right way, like the hand of a child. Uchiyama Roshi's book, Opening the Hand of Thought, Opening the Hand of Thought. So now the final stanza for today. The valley spirit never dies. We call it the dark womb, as soft as gossamer silk, yet we can't wear it out. As soft as gossamer silk, yet we can't wear it out. The valley spirit, the feminine spirit, soft, open, yielding. Whether you're a man or woman, men have a little more trouble tapping into their feminine spirit. But if you do this practice, it just comes up. And we need a masculine spirit too. Women who are kind of so undercover that they're afraid to come out and just be who they are, they get help from Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and Yang. We need some yang with our yin, yin with our yang. And we've got it. The Tao manifests that in the sky and the earth and the trees and the lakes. Water is yin. That's a whole other talk, all the yin and yang talk. I won't give that talk today. Give that another talk. The valley spirit never dies, never dies. So I've worked with two Zen teachers for many years. First was Suzuki and then Katagiri, and their wives were just wonderful supporters to me. Their wives, Mitsu and Tomoe. Mitsu and then Tomoe. Because I was just awkwarding around, clunking around, and they were just soft and supportive of me. I wanted to learn Japanese, and I got tongue-tied every, and Tomoe Katagiri just sat with me, breed with me. And I seem to always regress. But she didn't say anything about me being bad. She just said, well, come tomorrow. Come tomorrow. And I thought, oh, shit. Excuse me. Tomorrow. It's the same with Zazen. We think, oh, but if we stay with it. She was just there. She was just there. And of course, she helped many people with our sewing. Any of us who sewed, until recently, really depended on Tomoe. We had to sew all the sewing. Now it's Rosemary. Now Rosemary is the one. We don't see much of Rosemary. We think, oh, she's not here anymore. She's here. She's here. She's really doing something wonderful to support all of us. All of us. And you know the word in Japanese for the priest's wife, and it's a wife, it's a husband and wife, right? She who lives in the back of the house. Well, that's demeaning, isn't it? She who lives in the back of the house. It's really demeaning, but in the Taoist sense, she doesn't only live in the back of the house, she provides the ground for the house. She provides the lumber for the house. She provides the water to bring in the house. That's yin. That's yin. Yin energy. Sink into it. Sink into it. So when I was a young man, I lived at the Zen monastery that we started in California called Tassajara. And my teacher was very happy to find this place because it was in a deep valley. He said, this is good, being in a deep valley. And I said, why? He said, no need to ask why, it's good. Okay, being one of the Japanese Zen teachers. But I went down there and I felt it. Oh, it's good. The valley spirit never dies. He never said that, but you know, he's influenced by Taoism, even though he never mentioned it. All these teachers were influenced by Taoism. The valley spirit never dies. He said, if we have the monastery on the top of the mountain, people will think we're a big deal. They will all want to come. But if we go deep in the valley, there's stillness there, and we don't have to have too many tourists, because tourists get the Chatterbox Cafe all excited. He didn't use the term Chatterbox Cafe. That's my term. Get the people more excited. They want to get to the top. But no, the deep, dark valley is what supports us. That valley spirit never dies. Never dies. And so when I lived there as a young man, it is in a deep valley. Tassajara, you had to go down a windy road into a deep valley. That's at the very bottom. And in the winter, the sun barely comes into the valley. We had to work, do hard manual labor every day. And we didn't even see the sun in the winter. And then we would want to, at lunchtime, find sun. And there'd be a little bit of sun coming down into the dark valley. You'd think we'd all get depressed. But if we go into the dark womb, we discover great light. That's where we discover great light. Great light. So, but then, as a younger man, I didn't like the walls of the womb that much after a while. I wanted to get out of the deep valley. Just sitting all the time, doing manual labor all the time, sitting all the time, manual labor all the time. Nothing. So a town trip once a week. Who got to go on the town trip? This is a big deal. We drew straws to see who would get to go. The Tenzo got to go. Nobody wanted to be the Tenzo, but everybody wanted to assist the Tenzo so they could go on the town trip. Yes, get my chocolate chips on the town trip. And I didn't get to go to town for 4 weeks, so I had to steal chocolate chips from the kitchen. Poor boy. Poor boy. You're right in the middle of a retreat, and there's too much darkness for you. You've got to have light. But can you just stay with it gently? Gently. Just stay with it. The Tathagatagarbha Sutra, 600 years after Lao Tzu. The Womb of Buddha Sutra, appearing in India, 600 years after he gives this teaching in China. The Womb of Buddha, Sutra. Tathagata, Buddha, Garbha Womb. Garbha Womb. Here's what it says. Hidden by the negative mental states is the womb. Hidden by kernels enclosed by their husks is your very own womb. Hidden by a gold nugget in dung is your very own womb. A hidden treasure beneath the house, a sprout in the seed, which becomes a huge tree. A Buddha image wrapped in rotten rags, a wise king in the womb of a despised orphan woman. And the entrance into the womb, the character is for that in Chinese is a swinging door. My teacher said, what we call I is just a swinging door, which moves when we inhale and when we exhale. We release our neuromuscular lock and just breathe. Inhale, we go into the womb, and exhale, we leave it. And the whole world springs out with great fertility that comes from this womb, from this dark gorge. Great Te. Is it power? Is it virtue? We don't know. We don't analyze it. We just tap into it so we can live from it. Just tap into it. And in Western mythology, that's the earth goddess Gaia. Giving instead of taking. Humble instead of proud, yielding instead of forcing. And the final phrase, as soft as gossamer silk. We can't wear it out. As soft as gossamer silk, we can't wear it out. Spider web, gossamer is a spider web, made from spider webs. Isn't that interesting? So soft. So. It lasts no matter how much it's dependent on, it's used, it never gets used up. Our mama is always here. Our mama is always here. Whether we behave or we mustn't misbehave, held and supported. And of course we have in this Western psychology realm, unconditional love. Well, that's true. Unconditional love based on inner being, everything is inner being. But of course, as human beings, we have not had that easy a time from the time we got born. Everybody talks to me now about their trauma. Nobody used to talk to me about their trauma. I don't know if 30 years ago, nobody was traumatized or what it is. Well, there were so many psychologists, including me, all over the place these days, talking about trauma. But not that it isn't legitimate to notice your trauma, but your original trauma was getting born. Yikes. I was present at two of my kids. Well, I don't think I had any of the kids. I didn't have sex with anybody else except my wife, so I doubt if I had any of the kids. Missed opportunity, too late now. Anyway, I'm kind of off course here, but what's the course? Are we going somewhere? Is there somewhere to go this morning? Are we just being here together? Just being here together. So we all had birth trauma. We've all had trauma. And our birth trauma sometimes has been exacerbated by trauma that we had with our parents or with some other adult when we were kids, or even trauma in an accident. As I've been in one accident where my car was totaled and they pulled me out of my car, the paramedics, and got me into the hospital. But, well, we've all suffered some trauma. So our practice is to, and then our trauma makes us fear, afraid, when we're afraid. So our practice is just to stay with what is, just to do those two practices, the more yang practice of focused awareness and the more yin practice of letting your cows and sheep have a large pasture so they can come home. We need to complement those. As a young man, I did not complement those too well. Mostly I just drilled, sitting straight in pain, not moving my legs, just drilling down, focusing. And my teacher was fine. He did not counsel me to do anything else. Later, I wished he had, but anyway, he didn't. He said, yeah, that's good. Of course, he didn't counsel me to do that either. He didn't do technique. My teachers did not do technique. If you know, if you've ever worked with a Japanese Zen teacher, they don't do technique. Because technique, we're trying to get somewhere. There ain't nowhere to go. It's right here. Anyway, so I practiced so hard that I had trouble with my body shaking, which you guys, some of you have heard about because I've talked about it. My body would shake. In retreats, anytime I would get in a retreat, my body would shake. And then after a while, the dawn would make me sit in the hall. He said, you're bothering people. Cut that out. So then I went to Suzuki and I said, what do I do? He said, well, that's okay. And when I said, well, it's not okay with the dawn. The dawn is kicking me out. He said, oh, well, go cut a gig. Ask Katagiri, he will give you some exercises. So I went to Katagiri and he gave me some exercises that didn't help. Then I went to someone else and he gave me some advice and it didn't help. And I went to someone else, he gave me some advice and it didn't help. And I finally, Suzuki said, well, it's all right. The dawn can get used to it. Just sit. I said, will you talk to the dawn? He said, no. Just sit. Well, that was my practice, but it was very yang practice. There was not much yin. And Hakuin, the great yang Zen master, the great Rinzai Zen master, who drilled and drilled with his koans, he had a nervous breakdown from his practice, from his drilling, from his sesshin work, from his going into darkness work, and he was temporarily unable to function. Now, we don't know in modern vernacular what they would say for his nervous breakdown. I'm a psychologist. I was trying to figure that out, but I can't tell. He wasn't psychotic. I don't know what it was. But he was temporarily unable to function. So what did he do? He went to see a Taoist sage in the mountains. He went to see a Taoist sage in the mountains, and the Taoist sage gave him a guided meditation to do. Oh, I thought there was no guided meditation in Zen. And Hakuin then did the guided meditation, recovered his stability, his focus, his aspiration. And then although he was a tough Zen master, whenever his students started to get a little bit freaked out, a little unstable, he would do this guided meditation with them, which I'm going to end by doing with you guys. Yep, let's see what time is it, because I could go on and on. Oh, it's 10:41 already. I'll end with doing this with you guys. So why don't you I'm just doing it literally the way that Philip Leon Plosky translated it. We're just lucky. These translators are great Buddhas. They spend years translating. You know, I'm on my third book, authoring my third book, but I'm not the author of that book. First of all, Wanda Isle is spending hours and hours culling through everything I've done, as she did with my first two. And secondly, where did that teaching come from? Didn't come from me. Came through me, but didn't come from me. Where did Zen mind, beginner's mind come from? I heard Suzuki give those talks. They were barely intelligible. And yet, Trudy Dixon, my friend who died of cancer, spent hours and hours with those talks, listening to them over and over again, transcribing. Oh, Marion Derby transcribed them. Trudy Dixon edited them. They were the yin. They were the women. Wanda is the woman. They were the yin. Nobody gave them credit. Nobody gave them credit. And yet, the valley of the world, our Taoist teachers, our Taoist teachers. So anyway, here's a guided meditation, which we can do together. It will take about 2 minutes for me to do it with you. And why don't you start by taking a nice, get a rest in your posture, but also be relaxed. Take a nice deep breath or two. Breathing it all the way in, fresh, clean air. And breathing all the way out any stress or tension that you don't need. Breathing all the way in, fresh, clean air. And breathing all the way out any stress or tension that you don't need. And if you'd like to, you might imagine a lump of soft butter or a sphere of white light, pure in color and fragrance and the size and shape of an egg, resting on the top of your head, resting on the top of your head. And it doesn't matter what it looks like, whether it's white light or butter or something else. It's warm and it's resting there. And as it begins to slowly melt, you may notice how wonderful it feels on your skin, moistening and saturating your head within and without, your eyes, your nose, your forehead, your ears. And you may be surprised that as it continues to ooze down, it moistens your shoulders, it moistens your elbows, and even moves into your chest. It permeates your lungs, your diaphragm, your liver, your stomach, and bowels. And you might want to just allow yourself to feel the warmth being absorbed through your skin, glistening with healing, warm radiance. Seeing and feeling it melt all over your body and seeping inside your skin, infusing your blood with a radiant, healing warmth. Infusing your blood with radiant, healing warmth. Warming your blood and infusing your entire body with healing. Warming your blood and infusing your entire being with healing. Infusing your entire being with healing. Infusing your entire being with healing. And in another minute, I'll ring the bell and But for another minute, why don't you just enjoy whatever you're experiencing, not trying to go anywhere or be anyone. I think that's my talk for today. It's a good place to stop.